All right. We will start this time like we do every class time pretty much. Question and response about the sermon, Mark's gospel, anything really if you want to. Jerry's here and I'm going to hand all questions to him that I don't want to answer. I'm not joking about that. That's why he's here. Yeah. So anybody have any questions? Questions, comments, thoughts? The Herodians? Yeah, they were Herodians. They were in favor of Herod, and Herod was the best I can call it is like a governor kind of thing. He had the title of king, but he really had no power other than keep the peace because Caesar's in charge. And so they really liked that system because Caesar was nice to the Herods. So, yeah. Again, it's one of those things we just read over and go, oh. And the text should have directed you to our website. If you click on that link, it'd take you to a longer one.
So as we change things or we have to change things, that would be in that sentence. Mm-hmm.
And we'll
the vision, whatever. What was the vision? Thing?
That's the newsletter. Instead of using the MailChimp, we switched software that we're sending that out with. That's what it is. The other one was called the vision. You just didn't know that unless you looked at it closely. But if you go find the cover of one from last week or one of the printed ones, look at the front cover and the picture that's up at the top, and it says the vision. That's what it's registered with the post office. We kind of inherited that, so. Yeah, no. I people, no.
Well, that's their name.
Yeah. Yeah. There it is right there. Betty's got it. If you see right there in blue at the top, it says the vision. We have gone mostly to doing it online. We did that about a year ago. We were spending a lot of money in postage, mailing it. And so, I don't know, a year and a half ago, where's Janine? She can answer this. Yeah. So we were mailing out 200 bulletins a week. The format's going
to
look like that in the email. It's a long strip. And what that is everything there is hyperlinked. It's all the same information. Janine copies and pastes everything that's in that into the email. And if you click on it, it will take you to a link to it. So if there's an announcement about, I'm just going to pick something, a picnic in the park, you click on it and it takes you to a link where you can add that to your calendar. It gives you more information. Yeah. So. Eastsidefamily.church.
And then the CV.
/CV.
Okay.
Charlie Victor.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. And there's information there. We can post some stuff on the front page if we need to, but that's going to be our site. And if we need you to go look at it, we'll send you a message or we'll do the phone thing like we normally do.
Okay.
We're going to communicate it in every way possible.
We're still going to do Facebook.
Not everybody does Facebook. So we're going to do it on the computer, but not everybody does the computer.
Right.
So we're going to do it on the phone, but not everybody does the phone. So we're going to do it in text message, but not everybody does text message. So you're quickly figuring out how difficult it is to get information out. You can access the service from the website. If you don't do Facebook, you can go to eastsidefamily.church/sermons with an S because there's more than one there. Or you can, up in the very top left, I'll go pull it up. I'm actually going to show you on the screen. Let me do that real quick. So. So to give you a little bit of the logic behind the logic, if you will, we're moving to a new platform for everything that we've got, for the website, for the emails that we're sending you, to the communication we're doing. And the reason is it's all in one package so that we can do one action and it reaches everybody the way that everybody chooses to be reached instead of us trying to juggle 15 balls to get any one announcement out. So if you look at our website, that's it right now. In the very, very top right, maybe you can see it, maybe you can't, but in the very top right it says sign in. In the coming weeks, maybe even in the coming days, we may roll it out a little bit quicker, you're going to have a login portal where you can log into our website and you can, more or less it's an online directory. But in addition to that, it's almost like our own little church Facebook where you can post requests in there. You can get in and you can type in something where you say, you know, hey, I want a prayer request for this. Hey, I need a space heater. Does anybody have a space heater? That sort of thing. The world doesn't see it, but the church sees it. And we'll send out information on that. It can go right to your phone like it's a text message. You don't ever have to really get into the thing, but that's available there. But do you see up in the top left-hand corner where there's the little blue triangle? That's going to be your menu. And if you go up to the top left on that triangle, click on it, it pulls open. It's doing it on this page. I don't know if it's doing it up there for some reason. Let's see here. Let me get it to, hang on. Is it going to do it? How do I do that? Isn't technology awesome? let me see if I can. Ah, there it is. Okay, cool. All right. So I'm having to do this blind because I can't see my mouse. Ah, there it is. Okay. All right. So right there, you click on the blue triangle. If I can get my mouse on the blue triangle. There it goes. And it drops down. And I'm trying to see from all the way back here. Is that sermons I got my mouse on? Okay. If you click on sermons, it will take you. Is it going to do it? Okay. If you click on. Ah, there it goes. There's the sermons page. Do you see this great big giant black box that's loading? I'm getting ready to put us into a horrible loop. Because if I click on that, that will be the live stream, and you're going to hear me talking double right now. That's all you have to do is just go to our website, click on sermons, and it will be there. There'll be a little play button there that you'll be able to click. It's giving me an X right now because I've got it disabled on this side. But it'll give you a little play button. You click on it, and you can watch it. Also on here, there are various ways to sign up. I can't see if contact, is that contact? There you go. And you see where it says newsletter? Is that newsletter? You're going to have to help me. Okay, right above that, do you see where it says, is that community? That would also take you to that login area, which again, we'll tell you more about that in the future. But if you click on newsletter, it'll take you right there. You can enter in an email address and you can get a newsletter. Anything that we send out in newsletter format is automatically archived here. So if you didn't get last week's or you lost it, you can click right there and see it. There's the coronavirus update thing that we sent out to everybody. I sent it out as an email as well as on the webpage. So if it'll let me open that, I don't know if it will or not, but that's the same announcement that we sent out to everybody. So just showing you, we're trying to put as much information up there as possible that you can find, that you can get to with... Again, which is as much information as we can put out there, we're going to do that. So we'll keep directing you to the website for that sort of information. Because again, if you've got internet access, you can see that. Not everybody has Facebook. Not everybody has other things. So that's kind of where that is. Yeah, you can do that, and you can also we have an app as well that will take you to that. If you download the Faith Life app, Faith Life, it looks like a flame of fire. It's green. It's a green square. It's got a flame of fire on it. Faith Life app. You can download that. You'll have to create a username and a password, and then it'll ask you to find your church. Search East Side Church of Christ Snyder. It'll pop up. That's your church, and it gives you access to all that stuff that the backside of the website does as well. So But we're going to send out information on that later. You don't have to ever be a part of that, but it might be helpful if you're a part of that at some point. Okay, cool. Thanks, Jerry. Yeah, and if you have other questions, the answer is I don't know. I don't know, but we want you to be as plugged into communication as possible, and so we'll still send out the calls, we'll still send out the emails, we'll direct you to the website, we'll still do the Facebook stuff. So however you get information, you can get information. Please look for the information, though.
So
uh huh. EastsideFamily.church, or if you're in the Faith Life app, it's a link on the very bottom that's our website. It'll take you to the same place.
Okay, Matt, you said EastsideFamilyChurch.com/sermons.
/sermons.
I got, oops, that page can't be found. EastsideFamily.church.
EastsideFamily.church /
okay.
Sermons.
Family in there?
EastsideFamily.church.
Okay.
/ Sermons. And that's a website that I inherited. When I got here, our signs out here in the parking lot had eastsidefamily.net as our website. Guess what was not our website? Eastsidefamily.net. We didn't own it, but it was on our signs. So I went and bought that address, and for another $2, I could get eastsidefamily.church. And I thought, well, eastsidefamily.net could be a dentistry service, could be a doctor's service, could be a eye service. Who knows? Eastsidefamily.church at least communicated, oh, it's a church. So I bought that, and that's what we've had because I needed to buy it anyway because it was on our advertising material. And we didn't own it. So there you go. I think I could have bought Ray-Ban sunglasses on it when I went to it the first time I went. I get plenty of those emails, yeah. That. So, any others? Okay, well, if you've got a question, just feel free to raise your hand at any point. We're going to be talking again about the time between the testaments. It influences what is happening in the New Testament. For instance, 100 years from now, when somebody is going through another plague like they did in 1918, and now that we've gone through in 2020, and 100 years from now, somebody looks back and goes, well, why in the world were LeBron James's basketball stats so horrible in the 2020 season? Huh. How come the Rangers only played 20 games in the 2020 season? Huh. But if we know what's going on in the world, it explains that, doesn't it? So somebody in 100 years will have to look at the historical context of what's going on in our world to understand why in the world was toilet paper a thing? Which I don't know if we're ever going to be able to explain that one. But again, you're going to have to understand what's going on to explain it, right? We talked a little bit last week about how language is different. Ah, my clicker's not working again. Nuts. Can I get a volunteer to push a button for me? Yay, Sandy. All right. On the computer up here, it's just the right arrow button. Just one click and it'll get there. And if you go too far, the left arrow button will get you back. All right. So we talked last week about a phrase. And the phrase has to deal with being mad and a flat. Other computer. There you go. Right arrow. There it is. I'm simply mad about my flat. What does that mean? Depends on where I am. If I'm over on the other side of the pond, it means I'm really excited. I love my apartment. If I'm standing in Snyder, it means my tire's not working and I'm late and I don't want to be standing out in the rain or whatever else it is. So again, context. Where is this? What time is this? What's going on? That explains a little bit about what that phrase means. And when we're looking at a document that's written 2,000 years ago on the other side of the planet by people who don't have the internet, we need to do a little cultural context. We need to figure out what did stuff mean to them to fully understand what's going on. If you'll go to the next one, please. So we looked at a couple of... next one again. We looked at a couple of passages last week. We talked a little bit about why is everybody confused about the Messiah, and the reason is... something called the Maccabean Revolt, or you can look at it as the Hasmonean Empire. It's in both words. The next thing I have the talking about that? Yeah, the Crisis of the Maccabees. So we talked a little bit about that last week. Most of you have heard of Alexander the Great, the great conqueror, the Greek conqueror that brought Greek thought and Greek culture and Greek way of doing everything all over the known world at that time. And he lived, and then near the end of his life, he decided, okay, I'm not going to make it much longer. He died at a really young age. And as he was getting toward the end of his life, he decided, okay, I'm going to divide up my kingdom under all the people who served me well. And so he gives all these different people rule over areas. A guy named Antiochus was ruler over the biblical area in and around Israel. He's put in charge. He's not a great guy. He's not a nice guy at all. He goes down and he wreaks havoc in Egypt. And just for fun, since we had such a good time doing that, we're just going to come up and mess with the people in Jerusalem. And so they come up and they decide, hey, you Jewish people, you're not very good at being Gentiles. You're really not. Because we like pulled pork and bacon and you don't eat it. And when we go to the naked place, also called the gymnasium, when we're naked, you don't look like us. And so we're not going to let you do that anymore. They started forcibly taking copies of the Torah and burning them because, hey, you know, that book is going to teach them to do something opposite than what we're saying. They went in and they forcibly removed the mark of circumcision. That's all I'm going to communicate on that. They went through and Jewish parents who ended up going ahead and circumcising their babies, they killed the babies and made the mothers wear them like a necklace to teach them a lesson. And it gets worse from there. They to teach people a lesson, they burned them on the altar, they sawed them in half, horrendous war crimes stuff, and that was just everyday life around there. So there is a group, a family, the dad was a high priest, and they left Jerusalem to escape from what's going on. The temple's desecrated, they're sacrificing pork, they're making people drink pig blood. It's disgusting. They escape for their lives, but they can't take it anymore. So this family starts rebelling against people, and where somebody was going to go and sacrifice a pig on the altar to whatever god they wanted him to, the Maccabean family kills this guy and burns him on the altar. And so the son that really takes over the military family business, his name is Judas. Judas Maccabees. And if you want to find this, you can Google it online. Look for First Maccabees. It's not going to kill you to read it. You're not going to burst into being a heretic and burn in the flames of where. Just read it. It's a history book. It's laid out like the Bible. Some Bibles include it. I have a Bible that does have it in there. I have a lot of Bibles that don't have it in there. But it's a history book that will tell you and inform you a little bit about what's going on in the time leading up to the New Testament. You might know off the top of their head how many people are named Judas in the New Testament. I think it's 9 the last time I counted. We always think, oh, Judas Iscariot. You realize that Jesus had another one of his 12 that was also named Judas? He had 2 in the group of 12. Did you realize that he had a brother that was named a derivative of Judas? And we wonder why his brother may not have agreed with him. Well, we know his brothers were against him on earth. It's kind of interesting. Why was everybody named Judas? Because the hero of that day and time was Judas Maccabees. He was the one that stuck it to the Romans. He was the one that, you know, or not the Romans, the Greeks. He was the one that stuck it to the Greeks. And so now that we're under Roman rule, we want to do the things too. When you read 1 Maccabees, you're going to realize that they use the word zealous a lot. That Judas had great zeal for the word of God. That he was a zealous follower of God. And out of that came a movement called the Zealots. And in Jesus' inner group of 12, he has Simon the who wants to kill all the Romans and send them home and get these people out of here. And he also had a Roman tax collector named Matthew. How you doing? My dad's a tax collector, by the way. True story. So we wonder, why do they have this inner turmoil? We wonder, why do the 12 argue back and forth about what does it mean to be the Messiah? When he's arrested, they've got swords and they're ready to fight. And some of the gospel narratives say they swing the swords and cut his ear off and Jesus healed it. Some of them say they swung the sword and cut his head off. They're varying accounts, but they're all kind of, there's this tension. Who is this guy? What's he going to do? When he go to Jerusalem, is he going to be the king? He throws over temples. Yes, this is it. Is this the time we're going to restore the kingdom to Israel? And then they're really confused because he's arrested and they don't have an army ready to go. And there's a lot of confusion there. Why? It's because of the time and the culture that they lived in. And when we get a little bit more of that, it's not going to get you to heaven to know this information. It's not going to send you to the bad place to not know this information. But it informs us on a little bit deeper level when we read some of these questions. Why do they care if Jesus is picking heads of grain on the Sabbath? But if you know 100 years before that those who sided with the Greeks agreed that we're not going to keep the Sabbath anymore. So when Jesus and his disciples start walking through a grain field picking heads of grain, and they're already confused about who this guy is and what he's here and who are his loyalties to, looks like maybe you're siding with the empire. But when Jesus dispels it by going back to Scripture, not saying, well, Caesar's really not a bad guy if you get to know him. But yet he goes, well, Sabbath was made for man, not man for the Sabbath. Then they're really confused because he's not doing what we think he ought to be doing in the way that we think he ought to be doing it. He's the Messiah. Okay, where's your sword? That's not what the Messiah came to do. That's a short summary of what could be a very, very long study because there are a lot of passages, and why this isn't working, it drives me nuts. I keep clicking that thinking I'm clicking forward and I'm not doing it. So go ahead, Jesus in the Maccabean mindset. Let's look at the next one. This comes from John chapter 10, verse 22. Then came the festival of dedication at Jerusalem, and it was winter. So when the Maccabeans drove off the Greeks, they had their own freedom for a little while. They had their own, again, depends on where you look at, Hasmonean Empire. You can Wikipedia that. Hasmonean Empire. For a little time, there was a self-governed group in Israel made up of God's people, Jewish people that are there, and they're kind of self-governing. When they go back to restore worship at the temple and cleanse it and rededicate it, they get ready to relight the lamps in the sanctuary, the menorah, and they're out of oil. And there's no oil consecrated. And it's when? So what's not growing on the olive trees? So what can't I make right now? I can't make oil. So how are we going to consecrate oil? How are we going to do it the right way? Well, they said, we're going to do what God does, and we're going to trust him to do it. So the story goes that they started oiling up the lamps, they lit them on fire, and what should have been enough oil for one day burned for 8 days. And so they had the Festival of Dedication, also called the Festival of Lights, which we commonly know as Hanukkah. And Jesus participated in it. It's neither described nor prescribed in Scripture. God never authorized it. God never said, do it. Yet Jesus feels comfortable to be with his people. And when they're celebrating it, guess what? He's there. And he uses his involvement in it to teach a powerful lesson. And we looked at last week. If you want to keep reading there, you can read in John chapter 10. But our theology has been different on that. If it's not explicitly stated that we can do this, we're not going to do that. Well, except for projection screens. We're okay with that, but, you know, beside. And song leaders, but beside that, we're well in owning a building. But beside that, you know, you get what I'm getting at? Jesus didn't seem to have a problem with it. By the way, where did Jesus always like to go around and teach first when he went to a city? Synagogue. Where did Paul always like to go? Find me the verse that prescribes or describes or commissions or allows or sanctions a synagogue. It's not there. Yet it was a tool available to them and they used it, didn't they? I've used the internet several times today as an example. God never prescribed or described doing services on the internet. Therefore, we should use it to his glory and use the tools he's given us. Pretty good example for doing that. All right, next slide, please. Mark chapter 12, verses 13 through 17. We talked about this one this morning. Again, does anybody have any questions over the Herodians versus the Pharisees? They were as polar opposite as you could get. Yet they unite to try to get rid of Jesus. Why? Common goal. Why do they want to get rid of him? The Pax Romana, the peace of Rome, it's kind of a contradiction in terms. Because how do we keep the peace? We'll kill you. You can't fight back against us if you're dead. So we want peace. What happens if somebody gets unpeaceful? Time to nail you to a tree. Or put you to the end of the sword. And then it's peaceful. It's not really peace. And so when they're in this kind of delicate balance thing, most of the mindsets are, hey, if we can do this Judas Maccabees thing again and, like, run them out of town, okay, let's do it. Except for the Herodians, they're not in favor of that. They like the power that they have under the Roman emperor. And if he goes, power's gone. But if he's going to be this sage that keeps criticizing the way things are and not fighting against Rome, he really doesn't help the Pharisees, doesn't bother the Herodians. But it really bothers the Pharisees. So they hate him for two different reasons. Completely different reasons. So if we can pox Jerusalem, we can just kill him and keep peace, why not? That's kind of a driving force behind this. Just get rid of the problem. Just ignore that it's there. Pretend it didn't happen. I don't know if I put any more slides in on this passage or not. Yeah. They came to him and said, "Teacher, we know that you are the blowing sunshine. You're wonderful. Hey, we love you. Tell us, should we pay taxes to Caesar or not?" And again, that's a loaded question with those two groups because they have very different answers. Either way you answer, it's wrong. But Jesus' wisdom is greater than ours. So he doesn't have a coin. He's not involved in their hypocrisy. Again, they could charge him. And not saying that the Pharisees never carried these coins, but they weren't supposed to. I almost put it in my slideshow. I didn't do it. But the coin had an image of the emperor, and every emperor had their own money printed. So you knew what the emperor looked like by looking at his money. And it said that he was, that various emperors had different descriptions that they would call. Some said son of God. I'll jump to this one. In Revelation, you see Jesus described as the one who holds the seven stars in his hand. Okay, that's a weird description. Guess what the money there had printed on it? The emperor's son who had died. And he's holding seven stars in his hand and it says he's the son of God. What is Jesus communicating when he says, "I'm the one that holds the seven stars"? I'm the son of God. Don't get confused with where it's very much the same teaching here. Don't put your allegiance in the wrong place here. So again, it's stamped with Caesar's image. It claims that he is God. It claims that he is the chief priest, the high priest. He's the way that you worship. Why would a Jewish person have that on them? Unless they're hypocrites. So they ask him, "What about it?" And Jesus goes, "I don't have one. Bring it to me." Which tells you what? He didn't play that game, but who did? Somebody around there, because they had a coin, right? Again, it could have been the Herodians. Again, they were kind of in favor of Rome there. But again, they're Jewish. They're not supposed to have graven images. And how quickly did they find a coin? Pretty quick. So their hypocrisy is on full display here as well. Bring me a denarius. Let me look at it. Next, please. They brought him the coin. Whose image is this? Whose inscription is it? Well, clearly it's Caesar's. It says it's Caesar. It says who he is. Well, then, give to Caesar what's Caesar's and give to God what's God's. It's kind of interesting that Jesus is is under the authority, under the rule of Rome, but he's not going to be part of it. There's an old phrase we used to throw around a lot, in this world but not of this world. Perfect example. He has to live in the Roman Empire. He's going to be a part of it. There was other money systems that they could operate on. There were other things that they could do. He didn't have a coin. Didn't care. Now, does that mean that none of his disciples ever touched a piece of Roman money? No, doesn't mean that at all. But it means that when Jesus is trying to explain to us how we ought to act, if you're in the system, you got to be a part of it. There are things that in the system, you know, you're going to have to do. Give it to Caesar's. But don't give yourself to Caesar. You're in the image of God. Give yourself to God. How do we do that? Or maybe how did they do that? When everybody's trying to fight, when everybody wants to revolt and do an earthly kingdom, what does that look like? Say again? Thinking? Okay. We can think out loud with you.
Would you rephrase your question?
No. Yes. So either in to the people who Jesus is talking to or to us today, what does it look like to give to Caesar what is Caesar's and to give to God what is God's?
It's not fun.
It's not fun.
I don't enjoy it.
Yeah. Anybody here love paying taxes?
Maybe you let Monty pay your taxes.
He does that? He'll pay it where I don't have to?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I think Jesus does too.
That's part of this world here.
Yeah.
But what you need to do is focus on what you can do with God.
Mm-hmm.
Because you need to help somebody if they're broke down in a vehicle.
Mm-hmm.
Or you know somebody's hurt. You reach out. You reach out and show the love of Christ and doing things. And that's where you give God's God.
Mm-hmm.
I
agree with you.
Grace.
I agree.
Because what you do, you want other people to do that.
Mm-hmm. I don't get political.
That part's great, but the part where you have to pay somebody to have power over you, I don't like that part.
Well, it's tell like me. This, but you've got to understand, it's not power over you. You've got to have laws. Like military particularly, we got to pay them.
Yeah.
Okay, do you like judges and people in the court system to justice?
You don't have to answer that.
Okay. But you have to have it.
Yeah.
Rather not have
it. Yeah, the government absolutely has a function. There's no doubt about that. Mm-hmm. Yeah. If you don't like it a whole lot, I'm hearing Antarctica is pretty free right now. Might look into a cruise line down there. Although no, you can't get there now. But swim maybe, I don't know. But I don't get political. You know that. I try to stay out of that. But I read a report recently that showed what the government used to do. Turn the clock back 100 years, go back 200 years, whatever you want to do. Look at what the government did and what churches did and saw their ministry as. We've outsourced a whole lot of giving to God what is God's to Caesar. I'll leave it at that. If the people of God would do what the people of God are supposed to do, if we would be the image of God, we wouldn't need welfare because the church takes care of it. We wouldn't need a lot of the things that we... Moving on. Mark's gospel is pretty political, and I try to stay out of it, but anyway. Next one, please. This is Mark chapter 13. This is when Jesus is talking about what's going to happen to Jerusalem. He's he's given two different questions in the text, and Luke's gospel is where a lot of people go to. You get a lot of people that will proclaim, I say a lot, there is a group of people that will tell you that Jesus came back already, and we missed it. And if you happen to know anything about that group, they're the AD 70 group, that when Jerusalem was destroyed, Jesus came back, and he tells you quite plainly, that's when he's coming back. Well, if you merge everything he has into a blender and blend it up, yeah, that sounds like it, but he's answering two different questions here. So he's talking about what's it going to look like when all the stones of the temple are brought down on each other, right? They're leaving the temple. The disciples go, look at all these, look at this place. This is cool. Jesus goes, you see all these stones? They're not going to be left one on another. And he's explaining, well, when will all this happen? Tell us about this. They ask him two questions. We'll get into that in the sermons, but I want you to look at what's going on here. Sorry, go back. There you go. Up. Left arrow. One more time. There we go. Brother will betray brother to death, and a father his child. Children will rebel against their parents and have them put to death. What happened during the Maccabean revolt? That. Some said, well, Dad, I'm going to follow Antiochus because I don't want to. And so you've got the opposite went way, that way too. You had parents that said, well, we're going to do this. And the kids went, no, we're not. They literally killed each other. Happened during the Civil War too. You bet. It did. Keep going. Everyone will hate you because of me. But the one who stands firm to the end will be saved. Next, please. I know I'm really hard to anticipate. I'm sorry. When you see the abomination that causes desolation, stop. Where else does that appear in the Bible? And don't say in another, Matthew, Luke, John. Don't go to the other Gospels. Where else does it say the abomination that causes desolation in the Bible? Daniel. Daniel what? I think it's 10. I asked the question without firmly knowing the answer. I read it this week. 9:25, the abomination that causes desolation. When we started this look at between the Testaments a couple of weeks ago, I shared with you a quote from Martin Luther. And do you remember why Martin Luther was a fan of reading Maccabees? Because he felt it gave great explanation on Daniel 9 and Daniel 10. All the stuff that's talking about, he thought it was all fulfilled in the Maccabean revolt. He thinks, well, there it is. Because the abomination that causes desolation shows up in Maccabees as well. And what happened was, what was the most detestable thing that Jewish people could imagine? Pigs. They're unclean. Jewish people didn't own them, they didn't keep them, they didn't go near them, which is what makes the story of Jesus going across to the Gentile side of the sea, and finding the demon-possessed guy who's living in the tombs and is cutting himself and is bleeding and he's running around naked and there's a herd of pigs nearby. Disneyland! Woo! No. Anything but. It's a nightmare. But the Gentiles ate bacon. They raised them. They used them in worship of their gods. They would sacrifice them. Where the Jews are sacrificing a lamb or a bull or something like that, they'd sacrifice pigs. It was completely the opposite. We want nothing to do with that. So what does Antiochus do? He marches in to the temple. He takes all the gold inside. He takes the curtain down that divides the holy from the holies and the holy place. They desecrate the temple, they go in there, they put an altar on top of the altar, and they start sacrificing pigs. And they start lining up Jewish people and going, eat some bacon. And they said, no. Kill you. Eat some bacon. No. Kill you. Eat some bacon. There's a story in Maccabees of a mother who had 7 sons. And they made the mother watch as they went to every one of the 7 sons. And every one of the 7 sons says no. They torture him, they kill him, and they move to the next one. And they get down to her, and she preaches a little sermon to them. And then she too is killed. And the Maccabees used the phrase, the abomination that causes desolation was there. So when Jesus starts saying this, what imagery is he sending into the minds of all the people who are standing around him? All of that. Guess what Rome did in AD 70? They read what the Greeks did. They came in and did very similar things. They ended up killing Jewish people in the temple courts that were trying to stand up to it. They burned them on the altar. They tore down the temple, and guess what? It's still torn down. Rocks are still there. Not one stone is left on top of another. Anyway, this language is all over the text here. The abomination that causes desolation, standing where it does not belong. Let the reader understand. Do you get what I'm saying? Do you remember that story? Understand what I'm telling you. Then let those who are in Judea flee to the mountains. Next, please. Let no one on the housetop go down or enter the house to take anything out. Let no one in the field go back to get their cloak. How dreadful it will be in those days for pregnant women and nursing mothers. Pray that this will not take place in winter. Why? Because winter's cold. And if you're going to have to be fleeing and living outside and going everywhere else, don't be out there. Because those will be days of distress unequaled from the beginning, when God created the world until now, and never to be equaled again. If the Lord had not cut short those days, no one would survive. But for the sake of the elect whom he has chosen, he has shortened them. Next, please. At that time, if anyone says to you, look, here's the Messiah, or look, there he is, because what did they do when this happened with the Maccabees? They looked at Judas Maccabees and said, you're really looking like the Messiah right now. Of course, things didn't turn out for him. So they thought, well, maybe he was the one that was sent to prepare a way in the wilderness, because a lot of the Maccabean activities were out in the wilderness. Maybe he's the one that Isaiah was talking about. So there's somebody coming after him. So why is everybody supercharged and looking for the Messiah? Because they think it's ready. And indeed, the Messiah comes, but he's not who they're expecting. Jesus isn't riding around on war horses with swords. He's not knifing Romans in the back. Looks confusing. Next, please. For false messiahs and false prophets will appear and perform signs and wonders to deceive, if possible, even the elect. So be on your guard. I have told you everything ahead of time. I left that one out. Okay. Oh, yeah, but in those days following that distress, the sun will be darkened and the moon will not give its light. And he goes on from there to talk about, but in those days, he's answering two questions there. The first one is, when's the destruction of Jerusalem going to come? It's going to happen. Pray that it doesn't happen in winter. All this stuff's going to happen. Don't believe other messiahs. But, now let's talk about the end of the world. And there's all kinds of stuff that you can read about in there that, if it happens, you'll know it. Absolutely know it. You're not going to miss it. Okay, the next one is in Mark chapter 14, verse 43. Just as he was speaking, Judas, one of the 12, appeared. With him was a crowd armed with swords and clubs, sent from the chief priests, the teachers of the law, and the elders. What did Jesus ever do that would make them send an army after him? Yeah, he goes around healing people. But why do you send an army?
Because he has magic.
Who did they think the Messiah was going to be? With a
sword.
So why did they send an army after him? We'll mess with that next
time.
They
expected a fight?
I think they expected a fight. I think they thought he's rallying his troops over there on that hill. You know, anyway, we could chase that down, but we'll talk about that again. Whenever. Sometime. I'll throw out one quick disclaimer for you. Again, I don't know what's going to happen. I don't know the future. I haven't had any visions or revelations, or an angel hasn't visited me that I know of. But going forward, if we have to do something remotely, we'll send out that information to you in as many ways as we possibly can. There are ways where you could participate in a Bible study just like we've done, just like something like this, whether you have a computer or not. You could even do it with a rotary telephone. So we'll get that information out there, but we'll probably use a combination of Facebook, a combination of our website, and maybe Zoom, which Zoom is like a video face conferencing thing, which if you want to download the app and do it, you can do it. If you don't have that, you can dial in on a phone, and it's like a conference call. You can hear everybody and talk to everybody and do that sort of thing. So anyway, we've got a lot of options. It'll be kind of fun trying to figure out, and we'll have some growing pains trying to figure out how to do it. But in the meantime, may the peace of the Lord Christ go with you wherever he may send you. May he guide you through the wilderness. May he protect you through the storm. May he bring you home rejoicing at the wonders he has shown you, and may he bring you home rejoicing once again into our doors. Go with God. Yes, ma'am. And baptize your hands with hand sanitizer before you do it.